नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। रीडिंग फ्रॉम श्रीमद् भागवतम कैंटो 10 चैप्टर 2 टेक्स्ट नंबर 25। दिस चैप्टर इज एंटाइटल्ड एज प्रेयर्स बाय द डेमीगॉड्स। ब्रह्मा भवश्च ब्रह्मा द सुप्रीम फोर हेडेड डेमीगॉड Bhavascha, translation and purport by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Lord Brahma and Lord Shiva, accompanied by great sages like Narada, Deval and Vyas, and by the demigods like Indra, Chandra and Varuna, invisibly approached the room of Devaki, where they all joined in offering their respectful obeisances and prayers to please the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who can bestow blessings upon everyone. Purport. Dvava bhuta swarga lokasmin daiva asurayava cha Padma Puran. There are two classes of men, the daivas and the asuras, and there is a great difference between them. Kamsa, being an asura, was always planning how to kill the Supreme Personality of Godhead or his mother Devaki. Thus he was also Krishna conscious. But devotees are Krishna conscious favorably. Vishnu bhakta smrto daiva. Brahma is so powerful that he is in charge of creating an entire universe. Yet he personally came to receive the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Bhava, Lord Shiva, is always jubilant in chanting the holy names of the Lord. And what to speak of Narada? Narada Muni, bajai bina radhika ramana name. Narad Muni is always chanting the glories of the Lord, and his engagement is to travel all over the universe and find a devotee or make someone a devotee. Even a hunter was made a devotee by the grace of Narada. Srila Sanatana Goswami in his Toshani says that the word Narada Adibhi means that Narada Muni and demigods were accompanied by other saintly persons like Sanaka and Sanatana, all of whom came to congratulate or welcome the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Even though Kamsa was planning to kill Devaki, he too awaited the arrival of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Pratiksham taj janma om ajnanati mirandasya gyananjana shalakaya chakshurun militamena tasmai shri gurave namaha. So this is the prayers by the demigods is about to start. The introduction of this chapter is that Lord Narayan, Lord Krishna, has told the Yoga Maya the job what she is supposed to do, transforming Lord Sankarshan to the womb of Yashoda, Rohini, and then Maya Devi, Yoga Maya, coming to Yashoda's womb, and she offered her obeisances to Lord, willing to accept his orders, and she moved to Vrindavan. And then Krishna, the Supreme Lord, through the mind of Vasudev, he transferred himself into the heart of Devaki. And Prabhupada quotes Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur saying that it was heart-to-heart relationship. And as the Lord appeared within the womb of Devaki, all the demigods could recognize. Before that, Kamsa experienced the power of Lord's appearance. So he was very fearful. And meanwhile, the demigods are experiencing joy. And in this verse, Prabhupada explains that how there are always two classes of people. This world is made of two classes of people. One is the demonic and one is the divine. And if you read Srila Prabhupada in the 16th chapter, in fact, Krishna explained to Arjuna the qualities of divine. He says, fearlessness, purification of one's existence, cultivation of spiritual knowledge, charity, self-control, performance of all sacrifice, study of the Vedas, austerity, simplicity, non-violence, truthfulness, freedom from anger, renunciation, tranquility, aversion to fault finding, compassion for all living entities, freedom from covetousness, gentleness, modesty, steady determination, vigor, forgiveness, fortitude, cleanliness, and freedom from envy and from the passion for honor. These transcendental qualities, O son of Bharata, belong to godly men endowed with divine nature. That means one who claims himself as a devotee, he must consciously or unconsciously, develop these qualities. One may have the stamping of being a devotee, but then if he is not synonymously developing this quality, like in the morning when we were dressing, Prabhupada was explaining that Lord Chaitanya was saying that he was speaking about the Sahajiyas, how the Sahajiyas take everything so cheaply of being great devotees of the Lord. But someone who came to teach what devotional service is, he claimed that I am not a devotee. I am far away from being a devotee. And then Krishna also explains the qualities of demonic people. He doesn't define demons or devotees or divine people based upon their externals. And very interestingly, how he begins the commentary here in regards to describing the demonic nature. Pride, arrogance, conceit, anger, harshness, and ignorance. These qualities belong to those of demonic nature, O son of Pritha. Prabhupada explains, in this word, the royal road to hell is described. The demonic want to make a show of religion and advancement in spritual science, although they do not follow the principles. They are always arrogant or proud in possessing some type of education or so much wealth. They desire to be worshipped by others and demand respectability, although they do not command respect. Over trifles, they become very angry and speak harshly, not gently. They do not know what should be done and what should not be done. They do everything whimsically according to their own desire, and they do not recognize any authority. These demonic qualities are taken on by them in the beginning of their bodies, in the wombs of their mothers, and they grow, and as they grow, they manifest all these inauspicious qualities. So therefore we see that in the Vedic system, in the Vedic society, in the Vedic culture, the concept of demon or divine is not that just because you have certain religious connection you become divine. One has to work hard. Sadhana bhakti means that recognizing, when we start practicing Krishna consciousness by the grace of devotees, adau shraddha tata sadhu sangha bhajana kriya. When we come to the stage of bhajana kriya is the process of churning. And then anartha nivritti. And what is anartha nivritti? Anartha nivritti is, first of all, recognizing that I have got these anarthas. Till we start practicing Krishna consciousness, one boldly, or one actually takes pleasure in inculcating the anarthas. You know, all kind of vices. One goes out. Like when the children, they grow, they ask their parent, what is the harm if I go for a party? I want to go to the party. And if you don't send, they regret. There is anger. So they are going out to party. What does it mean? They are going out to inculcate bad qualities. And if they are not given that facility, they regret that I am not given that facility. Here the understanding that this is bad is already lost. And once we don't understand it is bad, and the society says it is good, and when we start doing it, then we become very boastful, shamelessly boastful, saying that, you know, this is what I did. Like I saw some advertisement, extremely sinful, that was part of advertisement. It is not, you know, to be sinful is considered good. So therefore, a demonic quality one develops whether one has taken the role of a devotee or not, one has to work hard to overcome them. Therefore, here Krishna is encouraging Arjuna. When Arjuna heard this, Krishna said, don't worry Arjuna, you are born of divine qualities. And Arjuna certainly was born of divine qualities. He possessed divine qualities. Arjuna's combination, his qualities were, he was extremely gentle, extremely noble, extremely respectful to his teacher. Even though his teachers had done so many wrong things, Arjuna could never become angry. He had to do the needful of attacking his teachers because they were fighting against dharma. But personally, he never lost the concept of being respecting his teachers. He never lost. Why? Because he had a natural divine quality. There was no personal agenda against Dronacharya, Bhishma Dev, Kripacharya. He was doing it on behalf of the Supreme Personality of Godhead who had come to establish dharma. So therefore, this anarthas to recognize is very important. First of all, to recognize, actually this is not good qualities, this is anartha. Just see how much the entire society is running after anartha, and if you don't have enough anartha, then you are considered as not successful. Narottam Das Thakur explains that, you know, I worked very hard to give up the real wealth. The real wealth is Krishna consciousness, that one worked very hard to give up that. One has to work very hard to achieve, but here opposite is happening. I'm working very hard to give up Krishna consciousness. Right. So when we perform bhajan, then we realize, okay, these are the anarthas actually. These are not good qualities. So one becomes shameful that, oh, I perform these activities. You know, he's very repentful, remorseful that I perform these activities. Then as he goes on performing bhajan, then he realizes how much anarthas are there. It has no end only. Govardhan Parvat is limited, but our anarthas is unlimited. And carrying that burden and being proud of carrying that burden, you know, and then coming to Krishna consciousness, then recognizing, then understanding how hard it is, how difficult it is to give up. Only when we give up anartha, anartha nivritti, then the next stage. What is that? Ruchi. What is that? Nishta. Sorry. Then there comes a great conviction. Ruchi comes afterwards. When Gopi Purandhan Prabhu left his body, what was there on his desk? You know, he didn't put some esoteric verse. You know, I'm meditating upon the anklets of Srimati Radharani or Sakhis. You know, this is far stretched for someone who is struggling with his anarthas. He talked about values, he talked about substance, he talked about qualities. He said, one, you don't have that, then he said, one should not go out. He said, stay in and perform bhajan, even though he was traveling around. But that was the mood. The mood was, I don't have good qualities, but as a duty, I'm going out and preaching. And Krishna brought him back. Such a powerful scholar, and a very pure-hearted devotee. So Krishna was very kind. He took him around everywhere, but the mood was, you know, what is it? It is the substance of the heart. So therefore here it's so important that this concept of divine and demonic, sometimes people ask, why in the Hindu scriptures, why in the Vedic scripture, there is always the gods are with weapons. Just see, in Buddhism, in Christianity, you don't find Jesus holding any weapon. Why all the gods in Hindu, even Krishna gave up his flute at some time. When he came out of Vrindavan, you know, Krishna was holding flute till he was in Vrindavan. Once he came out of Vrindavan, he was holding chakra. Why? Every god, Lord Shiva has a damru, but then he has Trishul also. And Kali, her eyes itself is like a weapon. You know, she is shooting anger through her eyes. Her mouth is so fierce. She has got different kinds of weapons in her hand. And she's so fierce, at times she is trampling upon Lord Shiva also. Lord Shiva is trying to tell her, no, don't. Why? all the gods and demigods, even the Supreme Personality of Godhead, even Lord Vishnu, he has got Shankha Chakra Gada Padma. That indicates the evil force will always exist. However much we think wishfully, you know, everyone is good, everything is nice, but that wishful thinking never actually happens on a realistic way. Therefore, disciplining is what the demigods do on behalf of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And whom they have to discipline? They have to discipline the demonic force. And the demonic force are very clearly demonic in regards to attacking. So if not for aggressively attacking, for the sake of defense, you know, the demigods, and this is a symbolic, you know, of course historically true, but symbolic means that we have to fight with these demonic qualities. And to fight the demonic qualities, uproot them, one has to have, therefore Krishna explains, Krishna gives, you know, he says about jnana, he says knowledge is like weapon. Chindamti shastrani. You know, by one who is equipped with sword of knowledge, what does he do? He destroys the ignorance born out of sinful activities. So therefore, the weapon are constant companion of demigods, not because they are violent in nature, because they want to establish orderliness. And in fact, Shukadeva Goswami, even though Kunti explains in the Bhagavatam first canto, giving different reasons why Krishna comes. Internally, yes, on an individual level, Krishna comes to elevate devotee's heart, because the devotee is afflicted by separation. But generally, from a society's point of view, why does Krishna come? And that's what Shukadeva Goswami explains, that this bhumi was trampled upon by the demonic forces. They were actually demons, but what were they doing? They're walking on the earth planet, creating so much of trouble. So therefore, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, to stop this demonic force, he appeared in this material world. And he had to perform the duty of, you know, discipliner, taking the chastising rod. Whenever that is required, without any hesitation he was giving. When compassion was required, he was giving unreasonably also. That is causeless compassion. But to say God should do only this, he should not be holding any weapons, no, it doesn't make proper sense. In the material world, we see even in the temple, whether it is a Buddhist temple or a Jain temple, the securities are there, holding guns in their hand. Why? Because those who are outside that temple, they may have a wrong, you know, conceptions. We want to attack, we want to destroy, we want to do this. So those who are sitting in the temple, it is not that the guards are sitting to shoot people who are coming to the temple. In fact, because they are holding guns, they are creating a fearlessness situation for those who come to the temple and worship peacefully Krishna. So therefore, at the gate itself, we have to exhibit. Like Gopinath Prabhu had gone to Ayodhya. He just came late night. He said, before you go and see Ram Lala, the deity of Lord Ram, he said, five places. And if you are sadhu, more security check. You know, five places, complete scanning of your body. And right in front of the altar, the army man is standing with a machine gun. Why they had to do it? Because something happened. So therefore, to create a facility for those who come to take darshan of Ram Lala in Ayodhya, thinking, oh, this is the birthplace of Lord Ram, I need to offer my respects to Lord Ram. For him to come and take darshan of the Lord, there has to be some system. Because people misused. They did something wrong. So we see that in this material world, this is how the world is arranged. Not that Krishna has made it like that. You know, by our wrong choices, by our wrong desires, you know, we make this world like that. And to rectify that, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, through his different energies, he arranges. So when that is organized properly, then preaching becomes very easy. So therefore Krishna, we see all the time, any incarnation of the Lord, whether it is Ram. Parshuram was born Brahmana, but he was forced to become a Kshatriya. Violent Kshatriya. Even Ram and Krishna did not perform such act of killing. You know, Lord Krishna would very skillfully, once in a while, you know, kill one demon, and that was also like a sportive, you know, even the demons got enjoyment fighting with him. But Parshuram, you know, he was roaming around. He had taken a vow, roaming around, whether good Kshatriya or bad Kshatriya, he treated everybody equally. If you are a Kshatriya, means what? I'll wipe you out. Prabhupada traveled 12 times all over the world. He traveled 21 times, you know, looking for the Kshatriyas. And if they're running away, you would catch them. And he was killing them. Prabhupada writes in the purport that he was killing these demonic Kshatriyas in the speed of mind. And when you would get tired, he would kill them in the speed of wind. There is no difference, no? In one sense. From our point of view, mind or wind, they have got the same speed. So he's killing them. Vamandev also came as a Brahmana, a dwarf boy. You know, still one may say, oh, he did not create any violence. When he came, trampling upon Bali Maharaj, putting him down to the Patal Loka, you know, coming as a Brahmana, taking away all his wealth and causing pain to his daughter and his, you know, his family members and his relatives and his subordinates like demonic people. To create orderliness, what he had to do? He had to trample him down, send him to Sutala Loka. The punishment had to be given. So therefore we see that in Varnashram, therefore the Kshatriya rule is so important. When Yudhishthira Maharaj's father, Pandu Maharaj, when he asked Kunti to invoke, he said, invoke someone who can establish Dharma. And then she invoked Yamaraj. Yudhishthira Maharaj came. And then he said, he performed tapasya for 1 year. Then he said, to establish Dharma, you need people with Kshatriya spirit. If you only have Yamaraj, Dharma is there. But if you don't have the stick to establish Dharma, Dharma will not be established. Simply by sermons, simply by talk, Dharma cannot be established. It is not possible. Our tendencies are very strong to simply listen to the knowledge. The very strong tendencies. Most people, what they need is not only the speech, but the stick, the discipline. Therefore, Mahabharata explains, he said, to help Yudhishthira Maharaj establish Dharma, you invoke someone who is very powerful. And who was called upon? Bhima and Arjuna were called upon, because Arjuna represents, Indra represents Krishna's power potency. Krishna's shoulders, you know, is represented by Indra. He is there to always fight the demonic force. We see if somebody is performing tapasya, sometime we say, oh, some sages are performing tapasya, then Indra comes to disturb them. Sometime they have unwanted desires. The demons have unwanted desire. They may be performing tapasya, and sometime Indra had to stop them. Why? Because they create disturbance. If they get perfection in their austerities, then they would perform chaotic condition in the world. Therefore, Indra had to stop them by some means. Why? Because it represents Krishna's chastising potency. So he had to invoke Indra, and then Arjuna was appeared. Then Bhima had to be called, so that the support system is there. Yudhishthira Maharaj can give the knowledge, but if the knowledge does not function, then the rod has to be there. Therefore, when Krishna came to Hastinapur, he tried to speak. Just see how balancing act the Lord does. It's not that he only raises weapons. He spoke. You know, he almost spoke what Arjuna heard on the battlefield. Very brilliantly, all the great sages from all the places came, very eager to hear Krishna speak in the Hastinapur. He came there, all of them, they came, and Krishna started speaking. Just imagine the Supreme Lord giving a class. Naturally, it must have been really powerful, the voice of the Lord, the way the Supreme Personality of God had presented. But still there are people who are not convinced even after the Supreme Lord speaks. They said, no, we'll not be convinced. In fact, they wanted to bind Krishna. They said, let us bind Krishna. If we bind Krishna, then what will happen? That the Pandavas become weak and then we will have our kingdom with us. And they came to bind Krishna. And Satyaki told, Krishna, they want to bind you. He said, they can't bind me. He said, I'm beyond ropes. He's Trigunatita. So how can Trigunatita could be bound by ropes? Even from a Vedantic point of view, it is not possible. Three gunas can't bind him. What to speak of ropes binding him? They can't bind him. But still, Duryodhan, Dushyasan, Shakuni and Karna, they tried to bind Krishna with ropes, but Krishna expanded. No, he manifested the trailer which he was supposed to manifest for Arjuna, the Vishwarup form. But still that also didn't work. The PPT was also presented, PowerPoint. But still their mind did not change. Why? Because the Shastra says some people, Prabhupada says, argumentum vachalam. That for someone, in the Mahabharata again it is explained, I think Sanjay told this, he said there are people who are like cows and there are people like donkeys. He said, Yudhishthir Maharaj is like a cow. You just tell him. If you want to correct him, you just speak strong words. But people like Duryodhan, they're like donkeys. What they need is stick. You beat them very badly. Even after beating very badly, they'll try to, you know, scream at you. They try to kick you. So Krishna says, I think Sanjay told this. So Krishna tried, not that Krishna only gave the kick to Duryodhan. He tried to make him a cow, but he was hell-bent upon being an ass only. So if you are hell-bent upon being an ass, then it is not the responsibility of the Lord. You can't blame the Lord for punishing him. Oh, how can gods hold weapons? In fact, the concept of nihilism is, from a perfectionist point of view also, not practical, and a practical point of view also, not utility friendly. You cannot practice non-violence at all the times. It is impossible. Therefore, to say ahimsa paramo dharma is the biggest folly. You cannot practice that ahimsa paramo dharma. So therefore, if there is a necessity, and therefore Krishna is not only full incarnation because, you know, he exhibits all kinds of divine pastime, even from a practical point of view. Varnashram gives that facility, how to live happily here, you know, achieve your artha, the material artha, and while achieving material artha, there is an element also of paramartha, achieving perfection. If by practicing devotional service we are not happy here, if by practicing devotional service we are not developing good qualities, how is it possible suddenly at departure you go back to Godhead? If you are not given the training to enjoy life here in sacrifice, in bliss of Krishna consciousness, in developing these qualities, sometimes people become very afraid, oh, he's becoming too humble, he's becoming too pure, you know, he's becoming too detached to this material world. Sometimes parents feel, you know, my child is becoming too extremely advanced in Krishna consciousness. No, unless one experiences that while living in the material world, one can also experience pleasure, and being trained here, then it's easier to go back to the spiritual world. If I'm extremely selfish, if I'm extremely arrogant, if I'm extremely harsh, so therefore we see, as Prabhupada explains here very nicely, that those who pose religiousness in their life, advancement in spirituality, even such people are very unkind. You know, they are hurting others. There is harshness, there is cruelty. Then what happens? That does not send good signals. Therefore, Bhagavatam explains, a separatist always practices devotional service in the mode of ignorance. Daksha Prajapati represents that principle. So much of respect, so much of desire for respect. And because for the desire for respect, what happened? He offended Lord Shiva. Openly, these people are like that. You know, they are always on the internet who are posing themselves as devotees. In fact, one devotee said, it's actually a curse of God that they are cursed to become devotees. They are looking for faults, you know, speaking so harsh about others. Their entire time is spent upon finding faults with other devotees. Of course, you may have the right to disagree with other devotees. You know, one devotee may want to do like this, another devotee may want to do like that. That's okay. And if you are troubled by him, you go to his authority. Just like when there is a fight between two people, we always see when two disciples fight, you know, that will happen. We can't avoid it. But rather than becoming judge, a criminal cannot be judge also. If both parties are fighting, and one party says, I am also, you know, he is also faulty, and plus he wants to be a judge also. That will not work. In the court of law, even someone says, you know, I don't accept this judge. If there is some doubt, the judge has to resign and somebody else has to come. Right. If he has to deal with that case, and if there is a background of that judge being somewhere closely connected to them by any means, then he doesn't take the, that's actual law, that at least the law. So similarly, how can you be criminal and plus judge also? How is it possible? You know, you are criminal and you also want to be judge. Now why not go to a superior person? That's what here Prabhupada explains. One of the qualities of demons is that they don't want to accept any authority. They become their own authority. They become their own judge. And they judge everybody. Left, right, center. They don't have the courtesy of going, okay, these are my doubts, and express it in confidence. It's amazing. An eye-opener. You know, Krishna is speaking about demons and Prabhupada is commenting so nicely. What is that demonic quality? That not wanting to accept authority. Because once we go to authority, what happens? Then we are exposed of our mistaken understanding. So better to be convinced that what I am thinking, what I am saying, what I am writing is right. I don't need anybody to tell me what I am doing, what I am not supposed to do, what I am supposed to do. So therefore, in such a condition, what happens? The demonic people, and especially if they have the claim of being religious, they become more arrogant. Sometimes one who is not, you know, religious, they at least know that I am not religious. And those who are religious, but they are not practicing proper religion, they create greater damage. In my understanding, atheism is not caused by scientists. Atheism is not caused by materialistic people. How much can they make atheism? But atheism is caused by theistic people only. When somebody sees a theistic person acting arrogantly, harshly, just because he has a religion, like Indian history again, if you see, who made the lower class rebel? Not some lower class created a, you know, group and then they made them rebel. It was the wrong behavior of the superior class against the lower class. Arrogant behavior, aggressive behavior. To the extent when you are even given prasad, I remember when I used to go to a temple while going for my school, you know, the pujari would be sitting in the temple and he was not like Sankirtan Prabhu, you know, smiling face, soft spoken, right? When you find someone, a sadhu, soft spoken, behaving nicely, then you don't need to preach. Their behavior itself is very pleasing and that gives the faith. I don't remember the face of the deity, but I remember very clearly the face of the pujari. No? Why? Because he would make a stern face and throw as if he's throwing a ball from a distance, you know, from the boundary line. The prasad would be thrown from distance, as if the person who has come to the temple is extremely contaminated. Maybe he's contaminated, but why not show him kindness? Unless you show kindness to him, you know, treat him nicely on behalf of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, what chance is there for him to get purified? And therefore, eventually what happens, such people, when they are not treated properly, they don't find any experience of God in the temple, then they stop coming to the temple. So who is responsible? God is not responsible, but one who is representing God, because he is behaving improperly, And he's very convinced, you know, I'm very pure and I cannot handle impure people. So therefore, we see atheism is not caused by demons. They have no right. They don't have the, you know, that kind of facilities to make. In fact, when a demonic people become very strong against Krishna consciousness people, the devotees become more stronger to practice devotional life. Therefore, Prabhupada explained, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur said, you know, Hiranyakashipu was more responsible for appearance of Lord Narasingha than Prahlad Maharaj. Because of his demonic qualities, he was prone demon. And because he was prone demon, he can only inspire demons. And he can inspire more devotees to practice devotional service more strongly. But if we find sometime so-called practicing people, they behave demoniac, then what does it do? It destroys our faith. We start questioning about the process of Krishna consciousness. And people talk, why, even after practicing Krishna consciousness for many years, why this man is so arrogant? Why can't he be kind to people? You know, why is he harsh? Why is he always judgmental? So in this way, the problem arises because of wrong practice. Therefore, here Prabhupada and Krishna explain that the divine qualities means there is a qualities. You know, therefore Rupa Goswami explains, how do I know who is a devotee? By lakshan, by character. One may say, I'm very rich. One may say, I'm very rich, and ask him, where do you stay? If he says, I'm very rich, you know where he will stay. You have a guess. Okay, rich people stay in this kind of localities. He says, I'm very rich, but where do you stay? He said, I don't have home. I stay in Chaupati. And every night I sleep on the Chaupati beach, you know, on a rags. Then you realize that he's saying he's rich, but what is his lakshan? He has no indication of being a rich person. Similarly, when I say I'm a devotee, how do I know he's a devotee? Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, one cannot recognize devotee just because he has a kantimala and tilak. A devotee is recognized by his lakshan. And what are the lakshan? Krishna speaks about his lakshan. So many qualities. When we have this lakshan, or we are trying to develop these qualities, then we are coming closer to becoming devotees. And when we exhibit different nature, the demonic nature, then that shows that here is the demonic person. But one who claims is a devotee and representing demonic nature, that creates such a confusion. I have an identity of a devotee, but my qualities are exactly what Krishna is speaking here. Pride, arrogance, conceit, anger, harshness, ignorance. If I exhibit these qualities, will it not cause conflict among people? And therefore we see those who are trying to do good to the society, first thing they say, that wipe out religion. If we wipe out religion, once the religion is taken away, the conflict will not stay. Then the society can live happily. Are they wrong in saying this? We may dismantle their arguments, we may smash them through our, you know, logical presentation of the Shastras. But why do they say that? Because their experience is, those who propose religion, sometimes you see, you know, if somebody says anything bad about some concept, some religion, some guru, you know, using bad words, and their followers equally bad. There is no logic there. Yesterday I saw somebody said something about somebody, and their followers coming out so heavily, equally bad. They're not presenting it logically, you know. They're not understanding why they're saying like that. Both are fighting. And when a neutral party sees this, what will be his observation? Whether one is proposing religion or one is not proposing religion, but their mentalities are the same. Their habits are the same. Therefore it is said, to be a Hitler for a good reason or bad reason is both bad. You may say, I am Hitler because I have got a right. Now I have got all this proposition why I should be Hitler. Still it is bad. Whether for a good reason or bad reason, it is bad. So therefore, one has to use right methods to preach Krishna consciousness, to practice Krishna consciousness. And therefore, when Prabhupada was asked, how do you recognize who is your devotee? He never said, yes, he gave importance to externals. You know, devotees are dressed properly, they are shaven headed, they wear, you know, tilak, they wear kantimala, that's a uniform. But beyond that uniform, he said, if they're not refined gentlemen and lady, he said, that's how you recognize. How do you recognize? They're perfect gentlemen and ladies. And if you don't inculcate, if you don't inculcate those qualities, then we are in the Kamsa's party. No? Like Yadavas, some gave up Kamsa, Bhagavatam explained. And some simply followed him. No, because of helplessness, because of the surrounding, because of the situation, you know, they stayed back and slowly, slowly adapted Kamsa's qualities, even though they were Yadavas. Who are Yadavas? They are eternal associates of the Lord. But still they are following the methods and the behavior of Kamsa. Therefore, this concept of Rakshasa and Daiva is an eternal concept. And it goes deeper into our system also. There are demons outside and there are demons inside. Therefore, one great saint, Tukaram Maharaj, says that the fight is there outside also and the fight is there inside also. And we have to fight both the fights, the outside fight and the inside fight. The outside fight is the responsibility of the good government. If the government provides that facility, you know, keep away all the demonic force, then it creates a good surrounding. When that good surrounding is created, then it is easier to fight the inside demons. And unless that good surrounding is there, it is difficult to fight demons who are within us. And that fight is much longer fight than the fighting the external demons. And therefore the Supreme Personality of Godhead appears to help the devotees to overcome their shortcomings by helping them practice devotional service very nicely. So in this way, one can make great advancements. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna. Any questions or comments? Yes?
Hare Krishna. You mentioned that we have to control, like the you say, demons by good government, by kshatriyas. So in this age also we need many people to take that role. And also it's explained that in this age the holy name would kill the demoniac propensities. So it seems like, from that statement, it seems like there's not the need for bringing the kshatriyas in and establishing that. Better just to focus on giving people the holy name. What would you say?
Yeah, not in our society. It's not that 50 brahmacharis are holding guns. You know, we are a spiritual organization. It's the role of the government to play. The Prabhupada would try to speak to the leaders. You know, they have to do it. Otherwise, as I said, why? Even Prabhupada in 1970s, when the demons attacked, you know, Nivrindavan and Mayapur also, he ordered, you know, there should be a proper security. So therefore, we have to work two ways. Those who are running the government, they have to hold weapons. And those who are running the matas, they have to hold holy name. If those who are holding the guns, they start holding the holy name. No, sometime it happens. The police are doing security and slowly they stop it and they start holding bead bags. You know, their duty is to hold the guns. Therefore, they are sitting there, not to chant Hare Krishna. That is why we have to have more security outside the police, you know, protecting them also and protecting the devotees also. So this is how the world has been functioning since time and immemorial. You know, so therefore, yes, the holy name has the power to wipe out. But to make it more effective, there has to be a Kshatriya government also. Otherwise, why would Krishna personally, he would charm people? It is explained in the Bhagavatam that the Lord's eyes, you know, Krishna can do nigraha and he can do anugraha also. Anugraha means to be compassionate, to be merciful. Nigraha means to eliminate. Bhishmadeva explains in the Bhagavatam, simply by glancing, he reduced the lifespan of the demons. So demons need to be given mercy by different methods. And this has always been in the material world. So what is our duty? Our duty is to chant the holy name and kill the demonic principle. But the government's duty is to kill the demons. Literally. It's not our duty. We can teach and we can preach about this. You know, this is what the government should do. But if you try to become the government, then you become a terrorist. You don't have the right. Even if you kill a criminal, just like, you know, if some terrorist is walking or some mafia is walking and you recognize he's a mafia and you kill him, the government will held you, will hold you responsible, and you will be, you know, convicted for being a murderer. Why? Because the authenticity is not given to you. Unless they come to attack as a defense, you may do. But somebody is walking out and you know, oh no, this politician is criminal, so let me wipe him out. You can't. Even if you are devotee or not a devotee, that responsibility is not given. Even like you saw in London, what happened? The police had no rights to shoot people, right? They had to only defend. They are going behind, and I saw some video clippings. They are not doing anything. In India, few will be dead. No? The police, eventually, I think they gave them water gun. Right? So till then, also you are in India only, that they must be knowing, right? They were not doing anything. They are going behind. Why? Because the sanction was not given by their authorities. If the sanction is not given and if you do something, what happens? The police people themselves become criminal. Therefore, when you say we are devotees and we only preach Krishna consciousness, it doesn't mean that you don't preach to the government about what they should be doing. If devotees start telling, you know, army people also, oh, in the army you don't need to, you know, fight your opposite member, you just chant for them, it's an impractical solution. They have to, the sound of the gun has to come out. Right. Otherwise, it doesn't work, because not everybody will want to change, give up their demonic propensity only by the holy name. On the external principle, they may need to be rectified by the principle of discipline. And that's what the Supreme Lord does. So how can we go against it? You as a Hare Krishna devotee, you'll only chant Hare Krishna and give the holy name. But when you talk to a government officer, you can't tell him, you know, you cannot hold weapons. It is injustice, it is not fair, you are killing people, you know, just give them beads. They should be ready to take the beads also. No? Before they give the beads, they will shoot the police officer also. So it doesn't work like that. And it is not what Shastras say. Yes?
Thank you, Prabhuji, for a nice class. You mentioned how sometimes followers would respond with the same harshness. So I'm just wondering, in our case, if somebody blames a devotee, say myself, I have to be humble and be tolerant. But at the same time, if somebody offends your guru, so in that case, what would be reaction? And if it's harsh, then how can you explain that to a third observer, what's going on and why you kind of blame them back?
Yeah, therefore, in present situation, if somebody is offending your guru also, and if you become very angry and harsh, you know, did you change his stand? You know, did you change his stand of being offensive to your guru? You know, simply there is a fight like cats and dogs, both parties are fighting. One is fighting on behalf of his guru being very loyal. Another is fighting blaspheming guru. So is there any solution beyond this, asking why he has that opinion? And if he's envious, stay away from him. You know, if he had some bad experience, explain to him, you know, his stand is not very right. You know, you can have a different stand. It is not that one has to be... In Kali Yuga, people will not like this. You know, at least those who claim themselves to be intellectual, gentle people, when they see in the name of religion you are fighting like cats and dogs. You know, you are equally doing the same thing what he is doing. It's not that one has to tolerate, but one should convince. And if he is not willing to agree, you can't take violent action, because that will not be appreciated and that will not benefit. That will not benefit. One may have to change the method of how one does it. Well, this is, I have experienced that one disciple, you know, kind of was critical about his guru, and another disciple of that same guru, he talked to that god brother, why are you like this, what happened to you, and explained there was a good relationship between these two. And this disciple went and told his guru. He said thank you very much, at least you know, at least you are able to talk to him nicely. He said he was angry with me. Guru appreciated the stand of his disciple about another disciple who was not very much, you know, he was unfriendly to his guru. At least you try to change him. So therefore, you know, in the Kanishta mentality, you know, people immediately, oh, he said something about my guru, my religion, my situation, then they become violent. But what is the benefit? You wanted some excuse to be violent, that's all. And guru, that's the best excuse to exhibit one's violence attitude. But didn't help anybody. You proved, but that proving of your conviction, loyalty to your guru is very superficial. At least this is what I've understood in my practice of Krishna consciousness. If something happens like that to me, you know, I may be angry, upset, but I would not go out. And, you know, we have a policy in our temple, amongst our brahmacharis, that never argue on the internet. Never respond to people on the internet. Never debate on the internet. Because why they are saying, what they are saying, what will you say, what they will understand, it never works. So therefore we always take the stand of, don't respond. If you meet them personally, talk to them nicely, see what is their stand. And they still they are very strongly exhibiting these qualities, you know, then what can you do? You don't have weapons. You are Krishna's devotee, you are not Krishna. Krishna can tell and Krishna can kill. Krishna's telling and Krishna's killing, both are absolute. We can only tell. We can only avoid the association. We can't kill. We don't have that. Legally also, it is not right. And morally also, it is not right. So what is the benefit? That is my point. You may prove your loyalty to your guru by being very angry, aggressive, you know, chastising. But what is the benefit? Simply you developed your passion and you gave the name of loyalty to it. That's all. You had a last question.
Prabhuji, ahimsa has got very broad meaning. Isn't we have restricted it to just physical killing only?
Yeah, therefore Prabhupada says not preaching Krishna consciousness is also himsa. You know, not giving Krishna consciousness to other is also himsa. Giving Krishna consciousness is also ahimsa. And not giving it is himsa. So he goes into much greater details of what himsa and what ahimsa is. Certainly, you know, yes, in our scriptures, you know, the concept of ahimsa and himsa goes much into greater depths. It's not about only killing. In fact, from Krishna's point of view, sometime killing is ahimsa. You know, therefore, even the great leader of India, he couldn't reconcile Gita and battlefield of Kurukshetra. He made this comment also, oh, you know, all this great freedom fighters on, and you know, he called, you know, famous kings of India, Shivaji, Rana Pratap, Ranjit Singh, he said they were misguided nationalists. So his concept of ahimsa is that at no condition you can raise weapons. The concept of, you know, if somebody slaps you and he said, okay, no, give another cheek, it may be good between two people. Individually it is good. But collectively it is very... Just imagine if all the people yesterday were discussing, if all the people whose relatives are killed by kasab, they plead the government, you know, we want him to be released because we want to exhibit the quality of non-violent. Great quality from their individual point of view. But collectively for a society, that is dangerous. That element has to be terminated. Just because they are saying they want to be good people, that is good. But you being good is dangerous to the society. You know, the Shastras don't see only from individual point of view. Individual opinion should also benefit the society. There has to be harmony between my opinion and the benefit of the society. Like in the Bhagavatam, Draupadi wanted Ashwatthama to be released. Ashwatthama was the murderer of the children of Draupadi. 5 children. He killed 5 of her sons, killed her brother, 2 brothers, and his father had killed her father. So naturally, the Kshatriya woman should be revengeful. But she said, no, release him. I don't want. And Bhima said, punish him. So Draupadi saying not punish him is a great quality. But from the society's point of view, Ashwatthama has to be punished. So what Krishna did, he also fulfilled Draupadi's desire by not killing him. And by cursing him, he made him suffer more than killing him. Right? Because he needs to be punished also. So therefore, never, we are not supposed to see anything based upon what I like, what I don't like. My liking may be very good, based on the Shastra. Arjuna not wanting to fight on the battlefield, Prabhupada glorifies on an individual level. No, he was compassionate even to the opposite army. Inko chhod do, nahi marna hai. It's a great quality. But from the society's point of view, that is not very good. What they need is, they need discipline. Because they will not change. What does Krishna say? You may do it, and what will they say? Are Arjuna is cowardice. And they will increase their sinful activities. So therefore, from Krishna's point of view, from our Shastra's point of view, you know, if there is violence has to be given, do it. And therefore, Prabhupada explains, non-violence in regards to war is the philosophy of the fools. And violence, nothing, it has to be balanced. Violence has to be balanced, non-violence has to be balanced based upon what is required now. Like a patient may work with a medicine, may work with a tablet, but may not work, then he said, amputate his leg. That's violent. But if by amputing leg, other part of the body can be saved, then one has to go for it. Similarly, some class of people have to be terminated for the sake of others. And you say, no, I only practice the principle of what? Non-violence. Now, you may feel very good, you know, in no condition I was revengeful. It is not about what you feel and what you don't feel. It is about how does it affect the society. We are not responsible only for ourselves, we are responsible for the society. Therefore, from that point of view, you know, you can't hold any stand. You have to hold stand based upon what the society wants. We have no stand. Our stand is based upon what the society wants. That is the point. So therefore, naturally, yes, the violence and non-violence goes beyond. Krishna told this to Pandavas. He said, one should not see things by action. One should judge by its results. Therefore, the violence of Kurukshetra war, which killed more people than all the battles ever happened in the entire world, but the benefits were good for the human society, you know, then it is not violence. It has to be taken as, you know, just like when you want to build a nice home or a building, what do you do? Like when they build dams, you know, I'm just giving an example, I'm not specifically talking about. What do you have to do? You have to move people from there. Villages are moved from there. You are taking away people who have lived there for ages and generations. You're breaking their emotional heart. Oh, you know, this is my village and my village is getting destroyed. But still you don't care. Why? Because you're thinking of the benefits of larger sections of society. If one village is sacrificed for the sake of saving 50 village and you become emotional to save their village, that means you're not a good administrator. So that's how Krishna's whole principle is. It is not about being individualistic. It is being, you know, society conscious. And that's what Krishna means. He represents the entire universe. So by being Krishna conscious, naturally one becomes conscious of others, helps others in their progress also. And that's what many leaders did not understand, that ahimsa and himsa is based upon how does it benefit. One may be very proud, you know, I at the end of my life also I never practice ahimsa, but because of you 20 lakh people are killed, what is your greatness? Aapke karan itne sare log mare jate and you are proud of your ahimsa, what is it? You may have to give up your vows of ahimsa to save 10 people. That is what, you know, Krishna teaches. So we have to follow Krishna's teaching. You know, he established dharma, he established kingdom. When we don't follow it, then we follow wrong methods of ahimsa, which is very superficial spiritually and impractical materially also. Either way, it does not benefit. Jai Srila Prabhupada ki, Granthara Srimad Bhagavatam ki. Jai.